Hi, welcome to the Meg Pearson Podcast, Fertile at 40. I'm your host, Meg Pearson. After many health complications due to alcohol addiction and an eating disorder that ruled my world for close to 20 years, I was told I would never have children. At 38, I naturally and surprisingly fell pregnant, and the transition from maiden to mother was wrought with love, grief, excitement, and healing. Becoming a mama was about far more than just soothing stitches and learning how to care for a tiny human. It was, and still is, a relearning of who I am and what I am truly capable of. After over two challenging years trying to conceive a second baby since, I gratefully and naturally conceived my second child just as I turned 41, after three losses and heaps of heartache. I am a doula in training, holistic chef, teacher of yoga, and a childbirth educator, and I am here to share my story because I know it's not just mine. Join me each week for unbiased convos with a no-bullshit approach to faith, infertility, conscious conception, and connected pregnancy, with birth stories, expert interviews, and personal anecdotes to help tell the story of creation. Welcome. Now let's do this. Hello, welcome to the show, you guys. I have an amazing guest coming up. Such an amazing conversation, such an important conversation. And it was so neat. I was just in Canada a couple of weeks ago visiting my hometown, small town, southwestern Ontario, Canada. And on the main drag, right there in the center of the village, there was a brand new surrogacy agency. I was so excited to see that. Unexpected, to say the least, but so cool. So today I have an amazing guest on the show who's going to be able to shed a lot of insight on this world. Stephanie Levitch has 20 years of service in the fertility world as founder and president of Family Match Consulting. She helps families grow in the ways that are still not spoken enough about. Today on the show, we have an important conversation discussing the many different ways that we can create families, including surrogacy, egg and sperm donation, adoption, and more. This is such a much needed conversation, not only for parents, but also for the education of our children, as far as I'm concerned. So we're going to discuss Stephanie's personal story with adoption and IVF, as well as many of the misconceptions around surrogacy and donation. We also will talk about her new book, From the Start, that she co-authored with her best friend to help teach both parents and children how to frame these important conversations about conception, birth, and family. So let's get right into today's episode. Here's my conversation with Stephanie Levitch. One last thing before we get into the conversation, I want to remind you that this podcast provides general information and discussion about natural medicine, health, pregnancy, and childbirth related subjects. The content here should not be taken as medical advice, and the content here is for informational purposes only, and because each person is so unique, please consult with your healthcare professional for any medical questions. Now, on with the show. Hello, Stephanie. Welcome to Fertile at 40, the Meg Pearson podcast. I'm so excited to have you here. Welcome to the show.
Thank you, Meg. Thank you so much for having me.
What a gift for myself in a selfish reasons and for our audience to have you here today. I saw a post recently that you shared on social media announcing this amazing book that you have coming out. And it's such a beautiful topic of conversation, because as my listeners know that, this podcast, a lot of the reason why I have it is to have these conversations that people aren't having and to talk about things that people aren't feeling comfortable talking about just yet. And I think that your book is such a beautiful tool for parents and for children to talk about surrogacy, egg donation, sperm donation, all of these things that, you know, it's happening all the time for people, especially for a lot of people I know in the older, more advanced maternal age category. And so I would love to just hear about you, your story, and what got you into this. And then we'll talk a little bit more about the book later on. But what's your experience with all of this magical, beautiful, mystical, scientific goodness?
Oh my goodness. Well, you couldn't have used better words to describe all of this. It is all those things. And I'm so grateful to work in this space and to help people through their journey to becoming parents. And it looks very different for everybody, but the reality is that it all comes from love. It all comes from this love and desire to share love with offspring. And regardless of how these little miracles come into this world, it's just beautiful. And so I've been blessed to work in this space for 20 years. My specific background is in egg donation and surrogacy and sperm donation now as well. But to go way back, I'll kind of talk through how I started in this field. I myself was adopted. My mom, I tell this story probably every day, and it's like I have new insights every time I tell it, and it makes me so sad every time I do, because I imagine my mom as a 13-year-old going to my grandparents, letting them know that her tummy hurts, and it hurt enough for them to bring her to the hospital, where they examined her and discovered an infection that had gotten so bad that the only way they thought they could actually save my little 13-year-old mom's life was to give her a complete hysterectomy. Wow. And so from that age, she just always knew, like, having kids in the quote unquote traditional sense wasn't going to happen. And so, and then years later, she met my dad and they fell in love, and she made the decision not to tell him for a while about it because she was afraid. And to her surprise, one day he got down on one knee to propose marriage. And she's like, shoot, it's time. She said, you know, before I answer, I have to tell you something. And she told him about the hysterectomy. And while on one knee, he looked up at her and said, so we'll adopt. Like, are you going to marry me or not? Aww. And so they did. They got married and went on to adopt me first, and then my sister, who became my sister, and my brother. And I'm so blessed with such amazing parents. I've got two of the best parents in the world. And the idea of people like them not being able to have that experience of becoming parents was so sad for me. And so I always knew I wanted to kind of enter into the space in some way, and I didn't know what it would look like. But I happened upon an egg donor and surrogacy agency in my hometown where I lived that was hiring. And I thought, gosh, this is so interesting. I really didn't know much about it, but I began working for the agency. I worked there for about 2 years before I branched off and started my own egg donor and surrogate agency for about 10-ish years. I sold that program, and then I started this Family Match Consulting. And I'll talk more about what we do, but you know, we basically help clients find egg donors, sperm donors, and surrogates to help them on their journey. We also offer ongoing consulting where we help clients through all aspects of the journey, because it's so much. You know, most people, unless you're like a same-sex couple who know you're going to, you know, work with a donor and surrogate to become parents, you know, you don't plan for this. You're in the throes of trying to achieve pregnancy. It doesn't work. And then you're presented with this option and it's completely overwhelming. And there's so many places to turn. You don't know where to go, who to trust. And so we really want to be an advocate and guide for our clients to just help make sure they're pointed in the right direction and starting this important journey off on the right foot.
Yeah. And I mean, there's so much there that I want to dive into.
And one thing I should mention too, that's kind of unique. A lot of people in my field, they start because they went through infertility themselves. They experienced it and, you know, they saw the challenges and they want to help. My story was a little different because about 10 years into my career, my husband and I tried to start our family. And as luck would have it, it didn't happen so easily. And so ultimately IVF did work and we're so grateful. And we have our two miracles as a result of that. But, you know, it was an interesting time to be working in this space, be thrown into, you know, the throes of IVF. And it was so hard for me. And I thought, gosh, for the people who have no prior knowledge or experience with this and are thrown into it, like, that's so challenging. And here I am, I know this world so well. And I really struggled. And so I'm just grateful for the experience, because you can't relate to those who have been through it or are going through it in the same way if you haven't been there. And I've been there. And I remember, like, every month, every failed result, just how hard that was. Or every month, just like waiting for something to happen while everyone's like seemingly getting pregnant around you so easily. Like, it's very tough.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, and my listeners know we've had some challenges trying to conceive our second child. I'm at the time of recording almost 6 months pregnant, Thankfully for that, and it happened naturally. But we started to consider, you know, in late 2020, early 2021, did we want to explore other options, and what would they be? And it was so overwhelming to even just start thinking about, you know, we talked about adoption, and then we're living in Costa Rica as Canadians. We're like, oh gosh, the international laws. And then we were talking about all the other options, and it became so overwhelming that I kind of shut down because here, especially in Costa Rica, there wasn't anyone that I felt like I could reach out to here that would be, that I would be able to really understand fully and be able to get the full story. So I love what you're doing now, with Family Match Consulting, and let's, I mean, I want to talk a lot more about that. I would also love to just go back to your story and ask you about, if you don't mind discussing it.
Of course, no.
You were adopted. How did your parents handle that? Because I know that this is another part of this conversation that I know you would address this in your book a little bit too, but there's just so many ways that, you know, adopted children grow up, whether they know, whether the parents choose not to tell them, whether they find out later in life, and it causes a lot of trauma. How was that experience for you and your family?
Yeah. So my parents, I think, handled it in such a beautiful way, and it's really helped shape kind of me, my journey in figuring out who I am and how I fit into this world. And so the way they decided to do it was before I could even understand what the word adoption meant. You know, they just started saying it and explaining it. And so when people ask me, when did you find out you were adopted? My answer is always like, I've just always known. So there was no just big sit down, like, we have something to tell you. I've just always known. And it was framed as just the celebration of love. My birth mother, her name's Amy, and I know her. She's in my life. I met her when I was 18, and my parents are very supportive of that. You know, they explained when she was young, in her late teens, she got pregnant unexpectedly and loved me so much that she knew she couldn't give me the life that she wanted to give me. And they had so much love to give and had the resources and things to be able to raise me that an adoption plan was made. And so it was just all framed as like, you were loved so much from the start, which is the name of the book, From the Start. I can't imagine them having done it in a better way. That's just really helped me. And there were still challenges. You know, one of the reasons, you know, for the book is not just to help give parents the language and tools to begin having those early conversations, but to also help destigmatize all these amazing ways that families are created. Because I have a memory in sixth grade, it was science class. And, you know, I'd known about my adoption since forever. And the assignment for the evening was, we were to go home and talk with our parents about our eye color, look at their eye color, and figure out where we got our eye color from. That was the homework assignment. Well, I couldn't do that at the time. I didn't know Amy, you know, it just, my story was different. And I like to think those assignments aren't being, you know, given throughout the world now, but I know that they are. And we need to remember that not all families are made in the same way, and one's not better or more right or anything than the others. And so I just want to help change the conversation about family building so that people later on in life don't learn, oh, that's a way a family can be created. Oh, that's a way. Like, we should just all know that there's so many ways, and they're all good and right and made from love.
Yes. Yeah. So, so beautiful. Now, oh God, this is going to be a whole other conversation. We're going to talk a lot more about yes. in another episode, I think, about, you know, how to frame all of these things for children. But let's talk a little bit more about your services. So for someone like me, that was, you know, the initial thoughts, like, God, what are my options? Like, I'm sure you get a lot of people walking into your office going, oh my God, we found out we are unable to have children on our own. What are our options? Mm-hmm. What is it? What's kind of the step-by-step process that your business takes people through in order to help them better understand?
Yeah. And so we help with, you know, whatever it is they need. So most often clients will have a fertility doctor already that they're working with. If they don't, we can help them find the right provider in the area they're looking. We work with fertility doctors all over the US, some even internationally. But most of them come to us having been informed by a fertility doctor that they need a donor or a surrogate, or it's a same-sex couple, and they need to put it all together. And they're like, what do we do? How do we do it? And the challenge is, you know, when we're talking about sperm donors, egg donors, surrogates, is there's so many options throughout the country. So there's sperm banks, there's egg donor agencies, surrogacy agencies. And the real challenging thing is, not only is it hard to know kind of who to trust with something so big, but also not every agency or bank or program is going to have the right candidate for any clients at any given time. And so the burden of finding, you know, a person you feel comfortable with who meets certain criteria to go on this journey with really gets placed on them. And so I saw that when I ran my agency before starting Family Match. You know, I was contacted by so many clients looking for a particular donor that we just didn't have. And I'd say, oh, sorry, go try other agencies. Like, I couldn't even help point them in the right direction. And so I wanted to figure out a way to create a program that we can, where I can guide clients and help them cast this really large net, do the legwork in finding these people that are going to help them on this journey. Because until you do that, you can't start. You need an egg donor or a sperm, you need embryos, and you need to put all these pieces in place. And so the way that I was able to do that is I took a group of agencies. So we work with over 100 egg donor agencies, sperm banks, surrogacy agencies. We've created this network of programs that we vet, we know, we trust. These are really good agencies, not just some program that exists in the world, because we also have a long list of agencies we won't work with. Mm-hmm. And we have really close relationships with these programs. And so they give us access to their pool of candidates. And so through questionnaires, where we get to know more about our clients and what they're looking for, we're able to find them, you know, candidates that are a good fit. And we're not just like a search service kind of spitting out profiles of candidates. We also work as their guide and advocate to help make sure they're being pointed in the right direction, because you don't know what you don't know. Like, nobody learns how to do this. It's not like taught in school, like how to find a surrogate in eighth grade, right? And so we want to really help them make those decisions until we get them to a match. And so by casting this large net, we get to be really selective and help find clients, you know, very specific candidates that resonate with them. We get to do it a lot faster. So we get to get them started on their journey much quicker. And then we also really arm clients with the confidence of knowing they're making the right choice on this very, very scary endeavor. Because again, you're not supposed to know how to do this.
Yeah. Well, and that sounds, it's such a, I feel myself feeling more calm about this. And I mean, and it's not even something that I'm having to explore anymore, but hearing that you have done all of this pre-legwork, you know, you've been doing the vetting, you know, what agencies, you know, are really good and respectful and integral and which ones aren't. Yeah. So God, knowing about you, if I had known, if I needed to 2 years ago, to pick up the phone and just call you and be like, help, God, that would be such a weight off my shoulders. Yeah. So what a gift that you've created for this, for families out there that are already probably feeling so confused. And so a lot of the time, you know, especially if they have been trying to conceive and then they find out later, like, okay, no, your options are a little bit more limited now. What a beautiful thing. So can we just talk a little bit about any misconceptions that people might have about egg donation and surrogacy?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I mean, there's many. You know, one of them in regards to surrogacy is that, you know, surrogates are just looking to make a buck and, you know, don't care about the pregnancy, but they don't take care of themselves, or that they want to ultimately maybe keep the child. That's a fear of a lot of intended parents. And I understand that fear. I mean, the idea of I'm going to quote unquote hire a stranger to carry my baby, that's crazy, right? But having worked with surrogates for so many years, I can tell you they're some of the most incredible women I've ever had the pleasure of knowing. These are women who have enjoyed being pregnant. They were blessed with easy, uncomplicated pregnancies and deliveries. So for them, it's like, this is a gift that I've been given and I have the opportunity to help somebody else. Yes, the financial compensation is helpful and it can help my family, but in turn, I get to help someone create a family. And what greater gift is it than that? And I always share with my clients, you know, so a surrogate once coined this term and I thought it was so clever. They called surrogacy extreme babysitting. And it's so true. And I equate it to, you know, like I have my two kids and I never want them to get hurt or scrape their knee, but it will happen. And I don't, you know, helicopter parent every room they go in, hoping they stay safe. It's just part of being a kid. They're going to hurt themselves. My best friend, who's also the co-author of From the Start, we wrote it together. She has two little girls and she brings them over to my house and I watch them a lot more closely because they're not mine. And I don't want something to happen on my watch or for them to get hurt. And surrogates really feel the same way. It's like they almost take even better care of themselves in the surrogacy because it's not theirs. And so I tell clients, you know, once you meet this person who's the right fit and she becomes real and has a name and a face and you learn her life and her family, so much of that fear and apprehension does get lifted. And as far as, you know, a surrogate wanting to keep the child, I have to remind a lot of clients who sometimes they come from a failed adoption or, you know, they were trying to have a family in that space that this is a very different story. You know, in adoption, birth mothers, they become pregnant and find themselves in this situation and have to make a really, really hard decision. You know, in surrogacy, they're planning to come into surrogacy, to be a surrogate, to do this for a person. It's all pre-planned and arranged. And, you know, we only do what's called gestational surrogacy, meaning that there's no biological connection to the genetic provider. So the embryo or the surrogate, she really is just quote unquote the oven, as they say. And women don't want to go through this like crazy crafty go through this process to, in a crafty way, become a parent to a child that they're not even genetically related to. Not to mention the laws support surrogacy and there's lawyers involved and it's all planned. But, you know, I like to be able to dispel those fears from intended parents, which I completely understand. It's a very scary thought to do this.
Yeah. Yeah. God, I would have so many questions just in my head because I'm not, you know, I don't know much about this.
Yeah.
I want to ask about, you know, how to become a surrogate, because I'm sure that mm-hmm. there are women out there, you know, that have thought about this, that are curious about this, like myself. I mean, not like myself. I don't want to be a surrogate, but I yeah. love being pregnant, you know, even with my older age, my pregnancies have been pretty, you know, problem free compared to a lot of other people. So I want to talk about that in a minute, but before we do that, I would love to just touch on any of the other biggest misconceptions, because I think it's really important that we get those, you know, out there.
Sure. Yeah. So another big misconception, which I can definitely speak to. So one kind of leg of our of Family Match Consulting is we work with a lot of clients in the public eye that have a need for privacy. It's a specialty of ours in that we're able to not only put together this whole process and find the candidates and guide clients through every aspect of the journey, but we can help them in terms of managing their privacy as well. Because as you can imagine, this is scary for everybody. But if you live your life in the public eye, you know, they have the same right to decide if and when to tell anybody about this as every other person. And so we have to set up some very clear parameters about how to manage and protect their privacy. So one of the misconceptions as it relates to those clients is that, you know, women are hiring a surrogate, going through surrogacy because they don't want to gain baby weight, or, you know, it's inconvenient for them to become pregnant. And that could not be further from the truth. Just because there's women out there, not in the public eye, sharing, you know, their reasons for pursuing surrogacy, that's their right, but it's also someone's right to not share those reasons. And there could be reasons that are so deeply personal. It's not always as simple as, you know, they're unable to carry, or they had a hysterectomy, or, you know, some very clear reason as to why it can't happen. But sometimes it's a matter of, you know, there's a medication that they're on for their mental health that's unsafe for pregnancy. And if they come off of that medication, it harms themselves. And so, you know, there's so many reasons, or someone had a traumatic, you know, loss or a stillbirth or whatever. And the thought of going into that, like there's so much PTSD wrapped into it that, again, mental health is something that we don't talk about very much as it relates to this process, but it's a significant piece. And so who are we to judge why a person comes into surrogacy? But I can assure you that it's for reasons that are far deeper than I don't want to gain the pregnancy weight.
Yeah. Wow. And I didn't even think about that. And it's true. You do see a lot about celebrities and stuff doing it that way. Of course, the people down here, you know, living our lives, it's, I can understand the depths of the reason for people. God, it's so, so layered and really, and no one's business.
Right. And whoever wants to share that, that's great. If they don't want to share, that's great too. It's everyone's own personal journey.
Yeah. And then, so we've talked a lot about surrogacy. What about, can you think of any misconceptions that might be that we could clear up about, donors, about egg donation and sperm donation as well?
I think one piece that would be interesting to talk about is, you know, this idea of anonymity. Does anonymity exist? What are the relationships with sperm donors or egg donors? And I don't even like using the word anonymous anymore. We did for many years in our field, but in this day and age with social media and just all the things you can search online, anonymity doesn't really exist, not to mention genetic testing that can be done later on in life where you can find relatives and things like that didn't exist when I started in this field. And so it's really added an interesting layer to what we do. And so, you know, the kind of default option when clients choose a sperm donor or an egg donor is quote unquote anonymous. There's a whole process with an egg donor, for example, where they enter into a legal agreement together. They're not named with their full names in the contract. So the process is done in a way to keep identifying information separate. But the reality is, and it's important to really know, is again, through genetic testing or just being able to find certain information online, there's absolutely no guarantee of quote unquote anonymous. And so, you know, I when I start in this field, a lot of clients would look for a donor, for example, with a particular blood type that could, you know, so that their offspring has a blood type that could come from, you know, the parents. And when I hear that now, I have to really let them know that you really want to think about the health and well-being of your child. And this gets into the conversation of, do you share? What do you share? When do you share? But it all comes down to, I think, honesty and openness is the most important for the benefit of the child. Mm-hmm. Because when we treat something like a dirty little secret, they take that on, they feel that energy, whether you say those words or not. And that can be damaging to a child and to their upbringing and how they figure out kind of, like I said, who they are in the world.
Wow. Yeah. 100%. Now I would like to switch gears a little bit and just talk about briefly, again, the other side of things, the options for people out there, if they have ever thought about, or, you know, I have a friend who has told me, recently, actually, that, you know, I've been asked to be a sperm donor for a couple that he knew. And so if I have any listeners out there that maybe find themselves in that situation, or for some reason are intrigued about the idea of becoming either a surrogate or a donor, what's the process for that?
Yeah. So as I mentioned, there's agencies that exist all throughout the country. Some are definitely better than others. So I would say call me and I'll point you in the right direction. We do also work with a very, very small group of in-house surrogates. Usually it's just people who are referred through the grapevine because of the nature of our clientele and a lot of privacy things, we have to be really careful. But regardless, I can help kind of point them in the right direction. But there's a lot of criteria for somebody coming into this process. So with surrogacy, for example, some of the very, very basic criteria is she should be between the ages of 21 and 39. She needs to have carried a healthy pregnancy to term and be parenting that child that she gave birth to. She needs to have really good family support. She has to be a healthy BMI, obviously live a healthy lifestyle, not smoke, use drugs. She needs to be financially stable. What we don't want is surrogates who are coming into the process as a means to earn money to do things like put food on the family's table. That's not ideal. We really want someone who's stable in their own life. And this is just a way to really help the family. So that's kind of some of the basic criteria. And there's lots of other layers, but they're walked through kind of a series of application and interview questions. Medical records are collected. Background checks are done. There's psychological evaluations that are done. So it's a deep vetting process. As you can imagine, it's a very important role that you're signing on to do.
Wow. And then, what about donors for, like, say, let's talk like sperm donors, for example. Yeah. I know that there's a lot of, I think that there's a misconception out there that this is just an easy peasy thing that you can go and hop into an office and walk away with a few bucks in your hand. But I know that there's a lot more to it than that. So let's talk about that briefly.
There's a lot more to it. I mean, there's so much testing. There's multiple visits that you're going to. You know, there's a similar vetting process to egg donors in terms of genetic testing, infectious disease screening, things like that. Obviously, they have to look at the sperm count and make sure the sperm is healthy and whatnot. And so there's that piece. Yes, the actual process is easier for a sperm donor than an egg donor who's giving herself a series of injections, going under usually anesthesia for an egg retrieval process. You know, it's a procedure. So it is very different, but there's a lot that goes into it. And what's interesting is there's some programs now. So there's the traditional sperm bank model where, you know, they test the sperm, they quarantine it, it's at the bank. And then once it goes through an FDA quarantine period, it's released to, you know, intended parents or recipients who are looking for sperm donors. There's a whole new model that's starting now for quote unquote fresh sperm donors, where these programs are able to recruit sperm donors, pay them a higher amount, more akin to what egg donors are compensated. And then they go to that fertility doctor and go through the screening there. So the fertility doctor of the parents that have chosen the donor, they go through all the testing there, leave a deposit there, sometimes numerous deposits, but they're compensated more because sometimes they're traveling across the country to do this. So there's a lot of changes happening in our field. It's really interesting.
Wow. And is it ideal for donors that are going in, like how much of their own personal history is, is helpful? Because I know, you know, we're looking to see what, you know, their ethnic background and all of that stuff. Yeah. That information is also is pretty vitally important, I would assume.
Very much so. Yes. So it's a different process of looking for a surrogate, because we're looking for just a very different pieces of criteria, like healthy lifestyle, all the things I mentioned, but her eye color doesn't matter, right? Whereas with egg donors and sperm donors, all of those pieces become relevant. And it's a very challenging process for many recipient parents to kind of figure out what qualities of those feel comfortable for them. And so it's something I do talk a lot with clients about in terms of, you know, what feels important. And we hear it all. And having done this again 20 years, when I think I've heard it all, I realize I still haven't. So we have some clients who really care about, you know, test scores and things like, you know, her SAT, ACT scores, academic history. Some are just really in tune to like the physical characteristics and wanting someone to resemble somebody in the family or look like somebody that they know or whatever. Others, it's more about like who they are as a person, what makes them tick, what are their interests, like, you know, are they a good person? And oftentimes it's a combination of all of those things. And so part of our work is to really delve into these things with clients to get a sense of what feels comfortable for them. And I always tell clients, you know, I think It's a very personal, important choice in terms of choosing the genetics of your future child. And it can be really easy to get hung up on, oh gosh, well, I'm 5'6". I want my donor to be 5'6" too. And this one donor, she's so great, but she's 5'4" and I don't know. And so I tell clients, you know, I think a really nice thing to look at is, you know, if a donor seems like she could be a good fit, a really nice question to ask yourself is, could this person sit around a family gathering of ours and look and seem as though she fits in? And if the answer to that question is yes, maybe let's not, you know, look at that 2-inch height difference, because this is about creating a family. And what more beautiful kind of like guiding point to make that decision when it, like bringing it back to what this is really about, you know, which is family.
Yeah. And, you know, when we're carrying our own children, we don't get to be all that particular either, right? Like I'm a 5'6" woman. I could birth a someone that's 5'1" or 6'3", right? Like, you never know those kinds of details, I think, yeah, obviously so much less important than the ability of knowing that, yes, this child is going to fit into this family.
And yes. And an important thing I didn't mention, of course, is the health history, because, you know, there are definitely certain things that are best to avoid when you're choosing the genetics, essentially, of your child. If you can avoid certain things, it's important. Or, for example, if the sperm provider has heart disease that like runs rampant in his family, we can choose to avoid that on the donor side of the family. Now, everybody's going to have something in their history. You know, egg donors are 21 to 29-ish years old. And so especially donors who are 28, their grandparents are starting to get older and everyone has things. So we're really just looking to avoid anything with like a strong genetic component.
Yeah.
Or that exists very heavily on the sperm provider side.
Wow. Oh my gosh, just so much information here and so much to unpack.
I know.
Unfortunately, for this episode today, we are just about out of time, but I love that we were just touching on how, you know, oftentimes parents are searching for characteristics similar to them so that their child comes into the world feeling a little bit more like family. We're going to talk a lot more about this in an upcoming episode about how to then work with children and communicate to children about all of these different ways that they come into a family. And you go into this in your new book, which is called From the Start. Let's talk a little bit more about that because it's coming out very, very soon in May. So tell me a bit more about this book.
Thank you. Yes, we are so excited. So I co-authored the book with my best friend since we were teenagers. Her name's Alana Weiss, and she's also a mom through IVF. And we've always just been so open about our own fertility struggles. And I had this idea for this book. I sent her, in fact, I have them here. I can show you. People who are listening can't see it, but this is draft one of the book.
Oh my God, I love it.
Scribbled pages. And I sent it to her because she is the most creative person that I know. And I said, I have this idea. And she's like, oh, yes. And so she hopped on board. And it's been a 2-year long journey of making this just right. But it's a book that really speaks to all the ways families are created, because there's books that exist on the market that talk about egg donation, how to tell your child that a donor was used, surrogacy, all these things. But, and that's important. I think that's so great. But what it doesn't do is give the child a broader scope or context of all the ways families are made. So it's like, this is the way you were created. Great. But like, they should know that that is normal. And so are all these other ways. And so it speaks to it's for any parent who's conceived through any fertility treatment, through adoption, surrogacy, egg donation. It can apply to all of it. And we're so excited. It was illustrated by the very talented Darren Gate. And we can't wait for everyone to see what we've been working on.
Amazing. It is available when and where?
Early May. So likely the first week of May. We're anticipating, and it'll be available on Amazon, Barnes and Nobles, basically anywhere books are sold.
Amazing. And where can people find more information about the book, about you, and social media, all that good stuff? If you can just tell me, and I'll put links in the show notes as well.
Yeah, absolutely. So the book's website is fromthestartbook.com. And my consulting firm is familymatchconsulting.com. And I have pages on Instagram for all. So From the Start Book, Family Match Consulting, and Stephanie Levitch as well.
Amazing. And like I said, I'll be putting links to all of that in the show. So thank you so, so much, Stephanie.
Thank you, Meg.
We'll be having you back on the show very, very soon. And we'll talk a little bit more about the book. Thank you. Thank you. Thank you.
Thank you for having me.
Thanks so much for listening. Please, if you would be so kind, I would be grateful if you could share, subscribe, rate, and review the show. Please follow the show over on Instagram at Fertile@40podcast and share what you thought about this week's episode. Don't forget to tag us. For more info on today's show, please head on over to the podcast website at meganpearson.ca/podcast. Until next time.